Welcome, folks, to the Slowpokes podcast. As always, Slowpoke number two here, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
Today, we are here to talk about a cool little indie game called...
Ollie Oxenfree.
Yeah, Ollie, that one.
Yep, there's a nursery rhyme that I don't know the rest of the words to.
Yeah, it's not a nursery rhyme. I had to look this up. It's not? Yeah, it's just what we know it as. It's the thing where it's like, hey everyone, the game's over, you can not get caught if you get spotted now or whatever.
Oh.
And no one knows where it comes from. There was like German origins and like a whole bunch of like folklorish American origins, but it's one of those weird little phrases that we just kind of don't really know.
It's terrifying.
Oh, it's not terrifying.
It's nightmarish.
It's only creepy.
It's diabolical.
It's only creepy because it's a thing kids like, and now that we're adults, all things that kids like are terrifying.
Oh, that
like clowns and older styles of animation and shit like that.
Yeah,
we've had these conversations before.
That explains why I'm grasping my guns now. But anyway, we're here to talk about Oxenfree.
Yeah, Oxenfree is a game from Night School Studio. It was released early 2016. I think it was January.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time that either of us have played this game, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, Night School Studio have only made two games.
Oh, okay.
Oxenfree and the... Mr. Robot Season 1.5 Text
that's
Adventure
right.
Game.
Right! That was the other... That's where I know them from. I was trying to figure out where... And that was published by Telltale, right?
Yes. I made a note because I know that you're a big fan of Mr. Robot.
I'm a big fan of Mr. Robot as a whole. Yeah. That game, the Mr. Robot one that you mentioned, it is... really amazingly good conceptually, and the dialogue in it is brilliant. They have an incredible sense of the character voices. Broken as fuck. Like, it sucks so much because, okay, I say broken as fuck. It's not broken as fuck. Plenty of people can finish it, but way too many people can't.
Mm.
It just, there gets to a point where you're waiting on a message to come and it just never comes.
That's very sad.
And like,
that sounds like my real life. I don't want to play
games. Yeah, and this is a game that, because it's sort of like a augmented reality style kind of game, it takes days and days and days and days to get back up to that point after you delete all your save data and try and get back up to it. So it's a real shame that it was broken in that way. As far as I am aware, though, Oxenfree was not plagued by any technical difficulties.
Not from my experiences, and not from yours, I think.
Yeah, and not from anything I read. I mean, I didn't, like, do a deep dive investigating it or whatever.
Mm.
I didn't really know a lot about Oxenfree going into it beforehand. It was just very much... Oh, yeah, there's some indie game that a lot of people like, and
and that does get my heckles up, and I'm like, ooh, an indie game I can sink my teeth into?
Yeah, an indie game that's about, like, sort of narrative-focused, and lots of people say it's real good. Wonder what that's about.
Yeah. I heard from a few people that, like, are reviewers that I follow and listen to. They did mention it, and they said, oh, you know, it's interesting and cute, and it has, you know, it's got teenagers who I like reading about because I'm weirdo, and, you know, and then there's some...
The older you get, the weirder that becomes as well. Like, you need... Once you start getting into 30 and you're like, oh, man, I just love reading about teenagers.
Yeah, stop saying that out loud.
Yeah, you've got, like, a good half-decade left before you have to worry about that, though.
Yes, not a complete half-decade. But we can pretend. But, yeah, I heard that... You know, the game had really good character stuff and also that it was a bit spooky.
Yeah. I knew nothing about it at all other than the indie thing. I routinely would get this confused with Kentucky Route Zero, another game I have not played, but also know as an indie game that is narrative focused and maybe a little bit spooky. Mm. But like, other than that, when I sat down and booted the game up and I saw that they were teenagers, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It's about teenagers, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even that I had forgotten. So I went into this tabula rasa. I went in there. Tabula rasa? Is that the right thing? I think I used the wrong Latin phrase.
I know that Latin phrase, but I don't remember what it means. And I thought it was about fighting.
Does that mean blank slate? Tabula rasa? Oh, fuck. Now we've got to print a retraction.
Stop the presses! Stop the presses!
Tabula rasa. Nailed it!
Nailed it.
Latin king. What? A+. Okay. Passes Latin. This guy.
That's your new subtitle.
Yeah.
Slowpoke number two, David Chalante, Latin king.
Aren't the Latin kings a gang?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure that's like a very violent gang.
No, it doesn't ring any bells. I think it's totally perfectly acceptable for us to use that phrase right now.
No, we'll just finish it at Slowpoke because I think I don't want to get shot. So that's our very loose understanding of, or my very loose understanding of what Oxenfree was before going into. John, you clearly had a much better idea of it.
Well, just a little bit.
Yeah. Do we want to actually start talking about the game as we enjoyed it?
I mean, we could just talk for half an hour about the Latin Kings, yeah, but I think we should move way past that.
Let's not, please.
So for me, the first thing I noticed about this game actually was the voice acting. Because that's the first thing the game hits you.
Yeah.
It hits you in the soundscape and one of the voice actors sort of talking. And then it leads straight into like this boat introduction. And that's when you sort of get what the game is going to be from there.
Yeah. So it's a very stylistic game. Like most people, if you've seen screenshots, you probably have an idea of what it looks like, but it's got this very deliberate aesthetic. And so starting off, like you say, with the voice acting for one thing, it is pretty fucking good all the way through. I don't think there's a point where I was really like, no, I don't believe that.
To me, it is one of the strongest, like, key things that it just stands out to me all the time, how much I enjoyed listening to all the characters talk.
Enjoy, I think, is a very specific term because some of them are designed to be annoying. Like, Ren is kind of annoying in a deliberate and kind of sheepishly endearing way.
Yes.
But I do know what you mean, that, like, the virtuosity of the performance is clearly there and everybody's delivering. I wish that I had the names of all the voice actors down. We might Google that halfway through the show. But yeah, no, there's some really, really good work from all of them. And I didn't recognize any of their names when I read through the credits.
Honestly, I feel like someone directed them as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I don't know what it is, but there's something about the whole experience that I just felt like there was a level of effort to the voice acting that just...
It was, yeah, it suited the tone and it was very, very cohesive as all the way through. Like, the voice acting is very strong and each character does have not just a unique vocal sound, but a unique written voice. That is to say, like, you know, they have their own unique ways of speaking and their own mannerisms. It clearly comes through in that record.
I played the game with subtitles on, and even if I took my headphones off and just read the subtitles without the names, you could tell. Like, that's what I could sort of get from that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. That's very true. Like, and it's such a cliched thing to say, oh, you could take any of these dialogue lines out of context and know exactly who was saying them. Like, that's such a cliched way to put it, but it's very true of this game. And unfortunately, it's not true of a lot of games. Yeah, the voice acting was very strong. And you also mentioned that it comes in with that opening visual, right? And I wish I knew more about visual art and I could actually, like, name the style that they use. But it has this almost... I think you made the comment that it's almost like a painting.
Yeah, I felt like the game was a series of paintings that you just, like, moved through.
And after you having said that, it's a lot more obvious to me because it's very two-dimensional. Like, you know, it isn't just that the plane of player movement is two-dimensional, but all of the buildings and everything, it looks, as you say, like a painting. And it's very, very beautiful to look at. I didn't actually make that connection when I first played it. When I saw, like, because the camera is set very, very far out, and it is like a side-on view for the control of the player and everything.
That's a great point. It's almost like at one point you get the map. You can look at a map of the island, and it feels like you're just zooming in onto a map somehow because it feels like everything is set on the same plane.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got, from that mechanical perspective, that very, very two-dimensional set to it. And the camera is very, very far out, and it's not isometric. It's flat. It points directly at it. And I almost got the sense that, like, a lot of the time when you talk about, like, walking sims or narrative-focused games, the first sort of comparison is to film. It's like, oh, it's a movie, but sort of like a game. Whereas the feeling I got from this one was more like it was almost like a theater stage because you're set so far back.
Mm.
And the place that each of the NPCs is standing within the frame felt a lot more like the directions of actors on a stage than it did, you know, the medium close-up kind of shots that you would get on a film.
As soon as you mention that, it makes perfect sense because there's no shots. It's all that one static look of the actors. There's no fast cuts. There's no cinematic moments apart from the stage. It makes me want to actually adapt this to the stage. And have some sort of audience voting
system. Yeah, I guess what is the big point of distinction is it doesn't have the discipline of editing, like of cutting from shot to shot and using different framing techniques and stuff and cut scenes in that traditional sense. That's not a part of the way this game tells a story. And that makes it feel a lot more like a stage show, you know? And that's a very good point that you've kind of isolated in my head. Like, I had this idea of, like, yeah, it's a bit more like a theater show, but I didn't know all the reasons exactly why.
Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting. I don't know if it's utilized as well as it could be, but it is kind of pleasing in a very superficial way to be like, yeah, theater instead of film.
Yeah, I found it because I was thinking about it from a painting point of view. It actually kind of reminded me of like when you go through a museum and you look at all the paintings and sometimes you have that audio log in the back of your head.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a moving story as it tells through all the art pieces.
Mm.
As you move through the different places in the world and the characters just like talk and discuss, I kind of felt this kind of soft environmental touch with this painted landscape, and the character's dialogue created an image in my mind that I found very enjoyable.
It's very interesting that you mentioned the audio log that you might have if you've got like the little guided tour in an art gallery.
Yep.
Because one of the fun features that this game has is you carry a radio around with you, like an FM AM radio. Mm-hmm. And the island that you're on is, you know, historically significant for the area. It's got like a military history and there's like elements of like, oh, you know, this island was first discovered by friars or whatever. And they have an information radio station on the island. If you go to different places, you can tune the radio in and get that little touch. And so that's very interesting because I never made that link to the painting thing.
And while the environments are like feel flat to me, the characters themselves are actually 3D animated.
Yes, in a way.
In the simplest of ways.
Yeah, it's like a cel-shaded 2D animation in a plainer sense, and like the characters still move, and you can discern their facial expressions, even though they occupy very little space on the screen as a whole. Mm. And that's very charming and very effective.
I just thought it was a great use of like a minimalism kind of style.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't have a big budget to do all the art special effects, it's like, it was a very pleasing effect to me.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna go out and say it right now, because I do feel like I'm a little bit low energy at the moment, I'm not really making this clear. The game looks fucking great. Okay. Like, I absolutely loved how this game looks. It's got a lot of style, and both the way that that's done visually and also with some of the audio stuff that you were talking about, how the game starts off with like this audio thing. The use of music is very, very powerful in this, because I'm realizing this more and more as I'm talking, is, you know, they don't have the ability of editing and like extreme close-ups on characters to be all like, oh, they're spooked or whatever. And so a lot of that is controlled dynamically by the music. Like when you first arrive on the island, it's got this beautiful little, almost like the kind of thing you'd hear in Stardew Valley or Harvest Moon or like an early Final Fantasy game where it's like, hey, this is kind of pleasant and fun.
Yeah,
and it's
the
like,
adventure's just starting.
And then, you know, these teenagers are going to go to the beach and they're going to hang out. It's going to be cool on this cool island. It's like, you feel very, very safe.
Yeah.
But later when you go back to these exact same places, there aren't drastic changes in the way the environment looks at all. It's mainly just controlled through the audio that you hear, where the music at the beginning is very obvious and very 8-bitty and very kind of chiptune-y and quite fun. Later on, it becomes a lot more about ambience, and that's very unsettling, and they are able to control that really, really well.
I feel like all they did was apply like a filter over the top of the paintings to make it look like night, and then they adjusted that. As you said, the music creates the real ambience, changing how the place feels as you explore it.
Exactly.
Or re-explore it.
And there are some places, the first time you go into them, you're fucking terrified. And it's all just, there's a lot that's done very well with environment design and music and the control of atmosphere. It's really quite good in that regard.
And sort of speaking of the sounds that you can hear, whenever I heard an otherworldly sound, because, you know, it's got...
There's spooky things in this.
There are spooky things in this. I was quite distressed. It actually really resonated in me, the kinds of sounds that you would hear when you're encountering these things. They struck a chord inside of me that was very unpleasant, to the point that I felt like I had to force myself and the character in the world to interact with them. Because I was so much...
Oh, I know. You're talking about like that very... So I'm going to try and keep this spoiler free, but there's that very early interaction that sort of gets the plot moving.
Mm-hmm.
And there's audio that happens then.
Yep. And even later parts of the game, that sound for me, there's something about it that hits me right in my core. I can't help but like, I'm just feeling internally.
Yeah.
It was just like...
I'm going to mime something here to make sure that... But it's more like the...
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're definitely going to talk about this later. I promise we'll bring this stuff up once we lift the spoilers.
Definitely. But I love it when a sounds can affect. I feel like there's something that very direct that I can get from sounds.
Mm.
And those kind of otherworldly sounds spooked me out.
So, again, we'll talk about some of that stuff later with the spoiler-free. I will say at the moment, the thing that you're saying there, I don't necessarily feel the same way about it.
Yep.
I think that on the whole, one of my problems with this game is that it goes for a lot of established tropes or iconography that is creepy because it's been creepy in other things. And so what the specific sort of sound effects and stuff that you're talking about, some of them were very affecting. Others I thought were very rote and didn't really fit. And it kind of brought me out of the experience.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, we'll talk about that in more detail later.
Mm.
Was there any more audio stuff that you had in mind?
I found a lot of the sounds over the whole game to be very affecting from using the radio itself.
Oh my God, the radio sounds are so good, right?
The sound of static has never sounded so satisfying.
Yeah, the AM/FM radio is a good example of this thing that I'm talking about where it's using tropes. Like, there's no reason that you would have an analog AM/FM radio as a teenager in 2016. There's very few reasons.
There's a story reason for why you bring one.
But it could be digital, is what I'm saying. Like, there's no reason that you would still have the old classic kind of dial with the light up back and stuff.
No.
Aesthetically, it's awesome though. Like, they have a really fun static sound to it. It's got a very good look, like the interface thing where, yeah, like when you use it, the dial kind of pops up above
the character's
head. Yeah. It's very reminiscent of that kind of 80s style hand radio.
It's very satisfying to tune as well.
And as you tune through it, the static comes in and out. And so it really does feel like you're exploring that radio soundscape on the island. It's all of that's done really, really well.
And it's even used in the game itself as you use the radio, because there's even some locks that you can open with the radio in a totally nonsensical.
Yeah, that's dumb, but like whatever.
Yeah, but it's dumb that you use a radio to open locks. However, the act of opening locks with the radio, while not very complex, I did find satisfying. It did make me feel like I was using a tumbler lock.
And so you can play with a controller or you can play with a keyboard and mouse if you're on a PC. And the scroll wheel does the shifting of the tuner, which I thought was very tactily satisfying as well.
Just before we go back into gameplay though, I do want to say that this game features Morse code. And I don't know what it is about Morse code, but the way it's presented in this game, it was almost impossible for me to actually distinguish what was being said.
Yeah.
I sat there with a chart. And I spent way too long on it because it felt achievable, but
yeah,
I don't know what it
is. And you saying that and the tone with which you're saying it is the exact reason I decided not to. Like,
yeah.
5 years ago, if there was anything in a game I would spend 2 hours trying to discern every single clue and read every single item, I don't do that anymore. I try to maintain a solid pacing throughout the experience. Because if I had taken that break, I would have been exhausted by the time I got back to it, whether I decoded the message or not. And so I just ignored any instance of Morse code that I picked up on that radio.
Apparently, it's connected to alternate reality game that featured like real life locations and things
like
that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that ended
even more pointless. I don't want to leave my fucking house.
But yeah, apart from that was the only thing I didn't like about the soundscape.
Yeah, and the other thing about Morse code, it's just an unpleasant thing to hear. Like, it's not a scary thing to hear, and it's not a nice thing to hear. It's just a gross beeping sound, and it doesn't help anything. You know what I mean? It's very hard to get those beeping sounds to be distorted or unsettling and still be discernible. It's a hard row to hoe.
It's because it's an emergency sound. It's supposed to be distinguishable.
Yeah.
But not
the satisfying. Whole point of it is it's supposed to be clear and unbroken.
Yeah.
So let's talk about gameplay. I'm going to say some stuff that I hate myself for saying.
Okay. We're all getting ready to hate David.
People like to use the term walking simulator to dismiss these games out of hand, and I want to strangle people who do that. One of my biggest criticisms of Oxenfree is you spend a lot of time walking.
Yep.
And the walking that you do is not fun at all. There's nothing about locomotion in this game that is satisfying, because they're going for this kind of 2D style that we were talking about before. The way the characters move is a little bit not janky, but it's not realistic. It's not very enrapturing to look at. The pace that you move at as well is a little bit slow. And because the camera is so far out, it feels even slower. And so just getting around this island and exploring it, which I was very excited at the idea when they were like, hey, let's explore the island. I was discouraged from finding all of the secrets because I was like, I could go down this other path, but it's going to take me 2.5 fucking minutes to walk down it and then walk all the way back. Again, this isn't a dismissal of the genre as a whole. There are so many games that have, like, you know, Beginner's Guide, for example. I didn't have any problem with the way you moved around in Beginner's Guide, you know?
Yeah.
Or what's the other one? The other Bluehead time travel game.
Oh, that'd be The Last of Us. No.
Life is Strange.
Life is Strange.
Right. I wanted you to say it so I didn't make the mistake that you just did.
I don't know why I confused those two games.
But yeah, like Life is Strange is another game where you walk around and talk to people and that kind of thing. And walking around in that world, it's not quite as sluggish as it is in this, because I think maybe the animation is just a little bit more realistic and there was just, I had a lot of trouble getting into it.
So my problem with the walking, I do agree that it feels a bit sluggish and it can be very frustrating. And sometimes when you're like at points where nothing's happening, you're just walking.
And yeah, nobody's even talking or anything like that.
So to me, the walking is very reminiscent of when I'm chatting with my friends, and that's when walking around is bearable. Not fun, but bearable.
Yeah, so an example of that would be when you first arrive on the island and you're walking up to the top of the cliffs with Ren and Jonas.
Or just Jonas.
Okay.
Depending if you ditch Ren.
Right.
Which is what I did. Spoilers!
I forgot that, I did that as well, but when you meet him up at the top. But
My stepbrother asked for some alone time, so I told my best friend to fuck
off. And I was just like, hey, dude, he clearly wants to say something that's going to be a little bit awkward because he literally just moved in, so can you cool it for a second? He's like, I can still hang around. No, you fucking can't. Give us some fucking space, Ren.
Ren,
it's a really bad first impression.
So clingy, Ren.
Yeah.
But, So I would enjoy walking through this environment. If I go back to my analogy of like the art gallery or what have you, walking, vistas, dialogue, flow. I felt that worked really well. The problem for me is not knowing how long those conversations would go for.
Right.
And sometimes I would get to the end of a map before the conversation was finished. And so I would just stand there.
Yeah.
Or the conversation would finish before I got to the end.
And then walking in silence for ages.
And I was so enraptured by the conversations themselves that I am blind spotting the fact that sometimes you just walk around in silence.
Yeah, and I think that the more secrets you look for, the worse that problem gets.
And
because
as someone,
you're spending more and more time without that conversation.
And as someone who found all the secrets, you're absolutely correct. I even turned on a podcast when I was doing the final lap to collect everything.
Right.
Because you're just walking around in silence.
Mm.
And that's not fun.
Yeah, it's not. And it's not the game's strength at all.
Yeah.
I think that there could have been ways for them to improve that. Like, there are one or two times where they do kind of time skip and get you back to, you know, like the radio tower or whatever. But I just feel like maybe make the lap maps a little bit smaller, because there isn't even really that much stuff to find, you know?
Yeah, I felt like sometimes you were even forced to go to do certain things in certain frames.
Mm.
So the game is several scenes, right? And as you go to each scene, you can sort of move around it and the camera focuses on different parts of it. But then there's entry and exit ways to different scenes. Sometimes I felt like the game wouldn't let me go somewhere until I did something in a scene.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I was like, well, why isn't this game just a linear experience anyway? Why aren't you just putting me through an adventure?
Like, yeah.
Why am I choosing where to go if it's just being a chore?
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned, I think we'll do a half spoiler now. There are moments where the time reverses.
Yeah, so like you'll have this little time skip where you'll go back to entering this particular zone on the map or, you know, scene.
Or you'll be at a crossroads walking up a hill and it will jump you back.
And so that is, we'll talk about the full intricacies of the whole time manipulation thing and the spookiness that's going on there.
Sure.
But again, they're jumping you back in time and making you do more walking, and it will only jump the time back again when you hit the trigger point to go back. So you've got to walk along this one path sometimes 8 or 9 times in a row.
Yep.
And it's just, again, it's the worst part of the game they're making you do over and over again.
I hate to repeat myself, but again, I found the conversations you had in those moments interesting enough, but I didn't know how long they were.
Mm.
So I would stand in the middle of this walking section and wait for it to finish.
And sometimes you've got to be careful, because sometimes the conversations would get interrupted by reaching other triggers that you wouldn't necessarily see coming. And so there were points where I was just like, this conversation is interesting. I'm not going to walk anywhere in case I accidentally interrupt it. And it's so weird to be enjoying something so much and that exacerbating the weaknesses of the gameplay experience.
So what I'm going to talk about right now makes me sad, because I really enjoyed Oxenfree overall.
Mm.
And I really loved the conversations and the landscape. But it actually brings up a big problem I have, which is the game doesn't communicate how you move through it. So like the idea of when does dialogue trigger? When does conversation end? Like, you know, when I'm talking to somebody in real life, it has to be a really big event to stop a conversation, you know? And because of the nature of the game and the moving through the space triggers different conversations, it can't flow as well.
Yeah.
And while you can actually, in the game, you can sometimes point out objects and the conversation will pause. They'll talk about that object and go back to it.
And then they go back to it. And they have a very natural way to do it where, yeah, like, the character goes, yeah, so sorry, I was saying that blah, 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 blah. And they go to the important information in the conversation. They don't just, like, robotically jump back to whatever line they went to.
That is so good.
Yeah, it's so amazing, but they only do it a handful of times. Yeah,
that is so good that it makes it even more frustrating when someone's halfway through a conversation and I step up a hill and suddenly they start talking about something else.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Yeah, it's very, very jarring because they introduced that mechanic very early on in the very first scene. You probably get to the top of that hill before Ren finishes his conversation, especially if you ditched him, right? Yeah. And so then you have the little thing like, how are we going to get over this fence? And then it goes back to the important part of that conversation. And so you're aware that they have this very fluid system in some parts, and it makes it so much obvious for the whole rest of the game that it's not there.
Sorry, what did you just say? It was like, what was the last part you just said?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay. So I was trying to very cleverly prove a point that in a real life conversation, I can ask you to repeat something.
Oh, right.
Which I obviously failed to do.
Well, no, that's more my fault because I legitimately could not remember what I just said.
But that's another point as well. In a real life human conversation, which I feel like they're trying to emulate, I can just go, whoa, you said something interesting.
Hang on. Yeah. You said something about Agnes and then, you know,
go back to it. And in a game where you can kind of trigger these future conversations, it just, because of its brilliance, you know, its flaws, they're more noticeable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the closer you get to perfection, the more the imperfections stand out. Mm. And, you know, I wouldn't go anywhere near to call a small budget indie project like this perfect. But, you know, like I said, that system that they use, that dialogue system that lets them pick up conversation at some point, very impressive for a game of this size.
Something that should be stolen and used everywhere.
Yeah, like, you know, games like The Witcher and Mass Effect, I don't think do things like this most of the time.
That's because they freeze time to do conversations.
GTA does it. Rockstar games do it. Yeah. If you're driving along and you're having a conversation and then crash into a pole and the passenger in the car, they might go, Jesus Christ or whatever.
Mm.
They then will pick up the conversation again. So
not as eloquently.
Not as eloquently. Like that's what I'm saying. Like in Rockstar games, it's very robotic. They go back to whatever line they were saying with the exact tone they said it with. Whereas in this, it feels a lot more natural because they go to the moat of what they were saying and they'll say something like, sorry, what was I saying before? Like they segue into it very well. It's pretty impressive for something quite small.
And actually just finishing up in my feelings about the dialogue system, it reminded me not to be blunt with people.
Because
as I was playing the game, I actually played through the first section twice.
Okay.
And I played through being very blunt with people and being straightforward.
Mm.
And it reminded me that with people that you don't know, sometimes being like forward can cause friction.
Mm.
I had this flash of like, duh, you idiot. Like you can't just say anything you want.
Use some tact. Yeah. Yeah.
Because like I felt like, especially in those very early sections when you're just teenagers on a beach, you can cause friction by just being tactless.
And especially because you're teenagers on a beach.
Yeah.
One other thing I will say about the dialogue system before we move on from it as well. It's aesthetically quite nice as well. So whenever your character is Alex, whenever she needs to say something, a couple of dialogue balloons will appear above her head. And then if you're on a mouse, you click it. Or if you've got the controller, they correspond to one of the three face buttons that isn't the A button. And that's like it's just like a little summary of the thing. Then she'll say a full line based on that little summary. And so it's very, like I said, aesthetically pleasing. It's very clear to read. It stylistically suits the look of the thing. It doesn't have like a gross overlay down the bottom or whatever.
There's no spin wheel or anything like that.
Yeah. And one other thing that, I mean, you mentioned the spin wheel that's obviously a Mass Effect reference.
Yes.
Mass Effect does this thing where like the location of the dialogue on the spin wheel is indicative of what the progression of that dialogue will be. Mm. Things to the left are questioning, things to the right are concluding, things to the top are paragon or good actions, things to the bottom are, you know, renegade or evil actions. I replayed one section of the game because I quit out of it much further on from a checkpoint than I thought I had.
Yeah.
So I replayed a dialogue sequence, and one of the things I noticed is that when the dialogue appears, it's in a random position.
Oh.
And it's such a weird little addition, right? And I think that part of the reason to do it was to stop people from just Xing through the whole conversation, that like they move the stuff around, and maybe that's like trying to invite the player to make sure they read it all or something. But it was a really interesting thing that they were dynamic or like maybe it wasn't random. Maybe there was more to it than that, but they weren't in set locations.
Sure. There is such a thing as like presentation bias. Like in a lot of games, like a male character will be presented first, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you randomize it, and so it'll be random.
That's a good point.
It increases how many people play female characters.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, anytime you can, if you have like a bunch of options, you might as well randomize them.
Because if you've got like a point where Ren and Jonas are having an argument, and you have to choose who to side with. Having one of them on the left, you read that first. Maybe that does cause like a slight cognitive bias. Mm. So that is interesting. It could have also been positional. Maybe like when they have dialogue that's about Jonas, maybe it's on the right if Jonas is to the right of you. I have no idea. I didn't experiment with it enough, but it's fascinating to me that it wasn't just answer number one on the left, answer number two in the middle, and answer number three on the right all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like when it was between two people, as it sometimes happened in the story, I felt like they did put the people on either side, so a neutral answer in the middle. But
they have no control over where you're standing in the scene either. They never take positional control away from the player.
Yeah, that's actually very true.
Yeah, which is also quite nice. Mm. Do we want to start going into some spoiler zone stuff now?
Yeah, I think now's about it. I mean, you know, we've really just established the whole game. The game looks pretty. There's some nice sounds. All the dialogue stuff, yeah.
All right, so those of you who want to enjoy Oxenfree spoiler-free, thanks for joining us. We'll see you some other time.
Indeed.
But spoilers are lifted, so we should probably go back to
the cave.
The thing we were alluding to.
Yeah.
So early on in the game, you enter a cave, and there is a weird floating triangle on, like, not on the roof, but, like, up near the roof.
Yeah.
By tuning your radio, you get to a frequency that resonates with this triangle, and it starts to behave weirdly. This is the point that John was talking about where the audio design upset him.
Yeah, it upset me so much that I refused to continue and actually backtracked through the cave.
Right.
And when you do that, the cave entrance is closed. And so you just have to go all the way back and, and finish what you started.
Mm-hmm. So the audio design in this section, it's kind of like an electronic frequency that's slowly raising the more energy you impart into this geometric triangle.
Is it like a theremin?
A little bit, not really. Not really, because that's like a...
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's, this is more like a... That's more like that.
As you hold that frequency that that it's attuned to, it intensifies.
And as the radio frequency that you maintain causes the triangle to intensify, the volume and pitch of the electronic hum it makes increases.
Yeah.
And so, for me... That didn't really affect me too deeply because it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's cliched, but it's definitely something I've seen before. Mm-hmm. Here's a creepy thing making a intensifying electronic sound. Didn't really upset me to my core. It was one of those things where I'm like, what the fuck are you fuckers doing? Why do I have to keep doing this? I would stop, but you know, they're all like, hey, let's see what it's about. And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's see what it's about. But the game forces you to do this at this point.
Sense. Yeah, definitely.
So now that we've gotten that.
That little moment.
That tease satisfied. Why don't we talk? Do we want to talk characters first or narrative?
Yeah, so the characters are really interesting. We'll just run through the characters very quickly. You play as Alex.
A blue-haired teenage indie girl in a indie game.
Yeah, yes. I think the Last of Us compared... Oh, god damn it, John.
It's not just Life is Strange. Like, all right. When The Last of Us came out, Ellen Page was big. And all cool teenagers were either literally played by Ellen Page or heavily inspired by Ellen Page takes on cool teenagers.
Didn't The Last of Us get in trouble for having someone that looked like Ellen Page while Ellen Page was in her Beyond Two Souls game?
I don't know if they actually got in trouble. I didn't even know those things were sort of concurrent in release. But Ellie is so obviously inspired by Ellen Page, there is no argument you could make that she's not.
I agree.
There's so many... influences that are so clear there, and we can talk like full-on Illuminati conspiracy theory type shit if we wanted to.
The corkboard's ready.
After that kind of died down, we moved into a slightly more up-to-date version of the cool teenager, and Alex epitomizes that, and so does, like, Max and Chloe in Life is Strange.
Yep.
This, you know, this more kind of, when I say indie, it's less like skater rock indie and more like hipster indie kind of is more where we've come now.
To stereotype it, yeah.
Yeah, and definitely. It's still a huge archetype, and when I saw... I know it's a little bit dismissive to go blue-haired teenager blurk, but there was a little part of my brain that was like, I know there's going to be more to this, but it is a very stereotypical image. And the way Jonas looks as well is very, like, hip teen, you know? Mm. Like, you rarely have a broad depiction of types of teenagers in stuff like this.
It's interesting. Now, in Life is Strange, there were jocks, but they were also, you know... It's a very small cast.
Yeah, and they do work to be a little bit more diverse, like, especially racially. Like, it isn't just a sea of white people. But in Life is Strange, there are still issues with how they depict, for example, the overweight nerdy girl and stuff like that. Even though she's present, it's still a very two-dimensional depiction of that character.
Yeah.
In this, the cast is much more limited than that. And, like, so many of them, I feel, fall into those tropes. Like, Cassandra, for example, is Alex's...
Brother's
ex-girlfriend,
yeah.
Right? And he's dead now. That's another plot point.
Yeah.
But she is, to me, like, I took one look at her and I Claire, I think, is the character from The Breakfast Club.
Sure, she's, I've, like, seen The Breakfast Club.
Redheaded,
yep.
Popular, she smokes, she's abrasive.
That's The Breakfast Club.
Like, and it's that exact character, and the name begins with the same letter and all of this kind of thing.
Which is something we all know, because we've all seen The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. If you haven't seen The Breakfast Club, you've fucking seen The Breakfast Club, because you've seen all other culture.
Yeah.
So the characters, I feel, are a little bit
kind of
archetypal and two-dimensional and very, very easy.
I feel like they do get fleshed out through the dialogue of the game.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And as the story goes on, you know, it kind of, they kind of stand out and become fully fledged characters.
Mm.
But yeah, especially when you first meet them, they just, like, feel very flat, almost like the background.
And there are some things that do, like Alex in particular, I think we learn a lot about her and Cassandra as well, for all of my criticisms against her. The dialogue that they use characterizes them very heavily. Nona to a lesser extent.
Mm-hmm.
Jonas, his characterization through dialogue, I almost felt, was counter to the image they wanted to depict of him. Because the way he talks about himself, the way other people talk about him, is that he's not a jock, but he's a little bit more like, oh, I'm not that smart, I'm not good at tests, why would you skip a test if you were smart, I wish I was smart like you, stuff like that. He never strikes me as not being smart.
There are some dialogue choices that you can make that accuse him of going to jail, or his school being in a bad neighborhood, and then he comes from a rough place. So I feel like there was a characterization that could have occurred if you made Alex be a kind of a jerk to him.
Yeah, and I asked something early on about, you know, I heard you went to jail, and it just kind of never came up again, because it was clear he wasn't super willing to talk about it, and I didn't want to be a huge prick. But yeah, it did make it feel very strange when he was talking about how I'm not that smart or whatever, and there was no evidence at all for me in my playthrough for him to think, and I wasn't even really able to counter that most of the time either. Like, I didn't really have the option to go, dude, who told you you weren't smart?
Yeah, like,
I've spent like 4 hours with you. You're the smartest person on this island who isn't me.
Yeah. It's a great point. Yeah. No, I totally agree. The execution wasn't perfect, but I did really enjoy the dynamic. The interaction between the characters was where it got really fun.
Yeah.
From Ren and Jonas arguing and me isolating them in the radio tower and just going away with Noda.
Yeah.
There's a choice where you have to go to town to get a key. And what is it? Ren and Jonah are arguing with each other, and I'm just like, fine, stay. I'm going to take Nona.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to take Nona because I spent a lot of time with both of you.
Yeah.
And, like, Ren is very deliberately annoying. We've talked about this already, but he, even though everybody knows there's a spooky thing going on the island, everyone's in danger, he just keeps munching down those brownies.
Yes.
He
the
just
first
keeps
one-
getting more and more high, and you're just like, for fuck's sake, I will throw you off this fucking radio tower if you have another one of those goddamn brownies.
Yeah, I wasn't very happy with either of them, really.
I thought Jonas was being more reasonable because, you know, he was one, sober, and two, actually trying to use reason and, like, you know, make a point, whereas Ren was like, my plan's great, and you're disagreeing with it.
I think, there's a part where, in my gameplay, where Ren says that I've changed. that you, Alex, the character has changed.
He says that you've changed. And I'm like, okay, I guess.
And, the way I would phrase it is this. It's like, Ren wouldn't be a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Right. He might be a friend of Alex, but he's not a friend of mine.
So it's one of these, air quotes, nice guy kind of persona. Like, he's a nerd. And we were talking about the two-dimensional elements of Ren. I don't want to make a blanket concrete statement, but I really feel like he's been coded Jewish, right? He's got a particular kind of curly hair. The way he dresses, the particular nerdy kind of humor he uses feels very much like it was inspired by a Seth Cohen type character.
Sure.
And so I don't know if they're deliberately trying to build Ren to be a Jewish character because it never comes up at all,
yeah,
at least in my playthrough, or if they're just trying to go for a Seth Cohen type character and didn't realize how Jewish they made Ren seem.
Yeah.
But again, he's very kind of stereotypical, just barely post bat mitzvah, fast talking, kind of witty and sardonic kind of Jewish nerd kid.
I found him annoying. I thought that was the point of him. So that was that. I really want to talk about my favorite character, the secret character.
I have no idea who this is because John and I, we didn't only play this game through once, but we did have different playthroughs.
Yeah. So when I was playing the game, and as we all play the game, there are moments where you encounter mirrors. And in those mirrors, a version of Alex tells you to do things.
Mm.
She'll give you advice, right? The person giving me advice was you. I'm not even joking at all.
Seriously?
Yeah. In the mirror was a version of Alex with your handle from Steam above it.
That's fucked.
Yeah, that's why I wrote it down as secret character.
Mine were completely random. One of mine was called Rain Dance, which was one of the backers on the Kickstarter or something.
Yep. No, mine was you, David.
That's fucked up. Okay, so this is what happened with me. All right. Yeah, tell you what happened when
David's going to tell me.
My reflections.
Yes.
Okay. The reflection of Alex would appear.
Yep.
Above the head, three dialogue balloons would appear. And the name above the head was Rain Dance.
Yep.
And you couldn't really make out what the dialogue balloons were saying.
Yes. Until
one was chosen. Right. And so you still chose it even though it was.
No. So I would be there.
Okay.
Standing in front of the mirror. Right. You would appear. The dialogue options would be there. I couldn't read what they were. And then one would get selected. And then play to me.
See, for me, I had to select one.
Wow.
When I played the reflection. I was giving myself advice.
But in those moments? During those moments? Or later on?
During those moments.
Wow.
So, like, what I imagined would happen is if I played this game a second time, maybe my choices for the first time through would come back and be the concrete choices. But for me, I actually had to pick a random balloon that I didn't understand, but you were getting what I was selecting.
Yes.
That's so cool.
That's why I told Michael to leave town.
And this would make sense, right? For me,
the assumption I make is the game knows if you have Steam friends.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Right. I played this like 2 days before you. So you would have had a Steam friend on your Steam list who's played this. My Steam list is not very big and I doubt any of the people on it have played Oxenfree.
Yeah. So I was getting your answers. If you played this again, you could probably get my answers that I made.
That's very cool.
Right. Which I ended up making, you know, the same answers as you did because I kind of agree with them anyway.
Yeah.
But there was just, I didn't realize it until as you play through the game, there's a moment at the end where I got to be the shadow person and tell a future person that.
And I also did that thing as well and could choose different things the first time because this time you can clearly see what the options are.
Yes. So you informed my game. And that's one of the reasons why I love this game so much.
That's very clever. All right. That's a very, very clever mechanical conceit. And we're going to talk about the narrative interactions with stuff like that in a second. I had no idea that this had something that cool in it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What's disappointing about that for me though is that those were based on my first playthrough. Yeah. So a lot of them, I didn't really fully understand the things I was saying as I said them.
Well, the assumption I make though is that it's using the answers at the end of the game.
I still made decisions there that weren't fully informed though, because there's still stuff to come, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very cool, but I think that there are ways that could be implemented in a stronger way that's more interesting, but like that,
as an idea, it's amazing.
It sucks I didn't know that it was in the moment. Otherwise, I would have felt those moments had a lot more weight than they did.
And that's why I waited till there's a microphone in front of you to spring it on you. But thank you, David, for telling me.
Yeah.
The future?
Well, I'm sorry that I misinformed you at least once.
Yeah, well.
Right.
I didn't listen to you all the time.
So why don't we talk about the narrative as a whole? We've got a little bit of time left here. I've kind of alluded to this already. My biggest problem with both the aesthetic design of the game and the narrative as a whole is it has a lot of these trope-ish kind of established ideas.
Yep.
And they don't really feel like they have a thematic purpose, right? So we were talking about these triangles. You feed the radio signal into the triangle, it creates a larger triangle, and that's like a hole into another dimension or whatever, or like a hole into the ghost realm. Why? What's the significance of a triangle, right? Sure. I was looking around and apparently there's a movie called Triangles that might have served as an influence for this game because it has this idea of, you know, these looping time things in it or whatever. Other than bland intertextuality, I didn't really understand it.
Triangulation is a radio technique for determining distance. But
that's a pun. That's not a theme.
Yeah, you're correct. It's not a very strong link.
And it's not just that. There's a lot of stuff in it. Like, whenever you get stuck in a time loop, you get out of the time loop by going to an old-fashioned, like, reel-to-reel audio recorder thing from, like, the 1910s or the 1920s and winding it until it's back up to the correct speed.
Yep.
And it's like, there is no thematic tie to audio tapes, to music, or anything like that. Like, if we compare it to a game like Life is Strange, film is a core element of who Max is and the idea of how they play with this idea of, like, you know, a photo is a memory and it serves as these, like, sinking points for her experience and her journey through life.
Yep.
That's more thematically relevant than the tape thing was in this. I think it was in this just because it's kind of creepy.
I can't dispute that. I mean, there's a lot of forgiveness that I give the game because I'm not a very good story writer. and B, I'm just so charmed by the dialogue, but you're totally right. It's a gameplay conceit to end that experience.
And I know that I go deeper on a lot of this stuff than other people do. And that can affect how I enjoy something, you know, that, like, it's stylized and it's superficial. And I've talked a lot about that thing Chris Straub says about how analog is scary because it's unreliable. And I made that comment right at the start of this thing. It's like, oh, they could have just had a digital radio. The reason they don't is because digital radios work or they don't. Whereas an analog radio there are multiple levels of success.
An analog radio works by, like, increasing electricity in wires.
Yeah. Analog can be unreliable, right? It's not binary. You can have a moderate success with that, and that's much more upsetting than complete success or complete failure. And so I understand, again, aesthetically why the radio is present, and I understand, like, sensorily why that's satisfying. Thematically, though, it doesn't really build on anything. Mm. And I feel like that's a big thing for the game as a whole, because it's about, like, these time loops, and it's creepy, and, like, I don't actually know, what decision did you make at the end? Did you have Alex close the portal from the inside, or did you have her return to the world?
No, I had to close the portal from inside.
Right? So, we have Alex, to end the game, she has to cut off the ghost dimension from the human dimension.
The plot's pretty thin.
Yeah. She does so by entering the ghost dimension and closing the ghost portal from their side.
Yep.
In so doing, she traps herself in the ghost realm for all eternity, like the ghosts themselves have been trapped there.
Yep.
That's creepy. That's upsetting. And for me as well, it's particularly upsetting because Alex is only, like, 16. And I know that's perhaps a very condescending thing to say as someone who's well beyond their teenage years. But if it happened to a 30-year-old person, it would make me much less upset for someone who hasn't actually lived what I would consider a substantive life.
If Alex was somehow a baby, we would all feel sadder about it. Like, I think that's a normal human response.
Yeah, but there's something very, like, I don't know, there was almost like a promise for growth for Alex that she was robbed by for being on the island and all of this. This is all ancillary, you know what I mean? I don't feel like this is actually, like, deliberate elements of the plot.
Yeah.
These are my own hang-ups. So she gets trapped in the demon realm for all eternity. And you're finishing the thing, and it looks like, oh, actually, she got out and she woke up on the boat, and you're all heading home. And she starts talking about, like, this is what happened. Everybody got away. This character was nice and happy because I was nice to them while I was on the island. This character was sad because I was a prick.
Yeah.
And while she's going through this ending, a little bit of static appears, and she kind of tumbles over and goes back into the intro of the game, and the game starts over.
Yeah.
And so there's this sense that, like, even though the ghosts are potentially trapped in that timeline, it's one of many, many timelines, and the loop is just continuing over and over again. Mm-hmm. And once again, very creepy, theme, though? What's the theme? Why is that important?
You know what? This just reminds me of a bad Twilight episode.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, as a Twilight Zone...
Like, I mean, like, a good Twilight Zone episode. But, like, you know, yeah, like, that was bad phrasing.
But I know what you mean. Like, when it's microfiction, it works. But this is, like, a 5 or 6 hour game for one playthrough. And as soon as it finished and I realized that you can restart the timeline and there's elements that are slightly different based on your first playthrough...
Yeah, so
I'm just kind of like, I'm going to have to play this again?
Yeah, the developers added, like, a new game plus mode where you can make different dialogue choices because Alex has experienced the game already.
And she has, like, this weird sense that she knows it, and if you decide to get trapped in a demon dimension, you can kind of communicate with yourself from there.
Yeah, it's a bit different.
And yeah, so like I said, it's creepy, and as you say, if it was maybe a lot shorter and a little bit more micro fiction style, and it was more just about delivering that scare, then maybe it would work a lot more. But because they have this idea of the looping time, Undertale does this so much better because there's so much more that's relevant about it. There's so much more depth to it, and everything in that game is full of thematic meaning and full of emotional meaning, whereas I feel a lot of that's lacking in Oxenfree. And it's unfair to compare any game to Undertale. Like, that's very unfair.
Should we compare every portrait to the Mona Lisa?
Yeah.
Like, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I understand what you mean, but I still felt that I could find a lot of enjoyment in this game, regardless.
And I also do want to make it clear, I didn't hate it at all. It's just, it's one of these things where, like, you get to the end and you have all of these signifiers that something quite deep is going to go on, that, you know, it's going to be something on the level of Primer or something on the level of Undertale or something on the level of Life is Strange. And you get to the end and it's just not quite that.
Yeah.
And so it leaves me wanting, but the strengths of the game are totally there. Like, there's incredibly strong dialogue in this game and there's a very decent characterization, as you say, once it gets moving.
And I could listen to them talk, like, just about inane things and personal life and struggles. It was just so satisfying. Whereas some games, I'm just like, shut up. Let me shoot some things now.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that this sounds condescending to some degree as well, but I think that part of the reason I don't enjoy this game as much as something like Undertale is because I am the kind of person who really wants there to be that deeper thing and it necessitates that deeper thing. Not everybody does. You know what I mean? It's totally legitimate to go into this game and be creeped out and see the interactions between the teenagers and see the downer ending or the upper ending or whatever ending you get and walk away with that. Like, that's a completely legitimate satisfaction to have, even without wanting to delve any deeper, you know? Like, that's still totally legit.
Totally. There's like, I mean, there's a whole realm of people who love, like, horror movies that sometimes have lighter texts, but there's still an enjoyment there in the act and the symbolism and the scares.
Yeah.
That can have its own entertainment. So, you know.
Yeah, and so this didn't give me what I wanted, but I think it's going to give a lot of people exactly what they want, especially if you relate a lot more directly to the characters than I would as someone who's, you know, 10 years their senior.
Yeah, I swear, there are some games I play. Emily is Away comes to mind, which is a free game that anyone can download on Steam, which is just dialogue conversations backwards and forwards. And, like, that is enough for me.
Yeah.
I can just play conversations the game. And so when this had such a focus on those dialogue and how the talking went and how it flowed, that's almost enough for me on its own to have.
Yeah, and I think that if it was in isolation, I'd be super satisfied with it. As I said, though, it's like the game kind of, to me, seemed like it was going somewhere bigger than it was, and that's what left me feeling a bit hollow about it. Anyway, that's Oxenfree. Do we want to do our self-promotion type stuff now?
Yeah, self-promotion time! You can find us, as always, where all good podcasts are sold for free. we're also on iTunes, where you can totally give us a review, because you love us, and we love you.
Yes, we deeply appreciate that. Our website is slowpokespodcast.com, Twitter, @slowpokescast, and Facebook is facebook.com/slowpokespodcast.
Yep.
If you are interested in conversing with us or, you know, suggesting topics for our Fastcast episodes.
Fastcast!
Those are the best place to do those.
Fastcast!
There may be, just as a little bit of a heads up here, folks, some changes to the way we're hosting the show. It won't affect like 98% of you, but if you ever do find yourself wondering why you haven't heard from us in like 4 weeks, jump on our website because something might have gone wrong.
Yeah, we're still here, probably.
Yeah, tweet us, and ask what's going on with that.
We'd make a goodbye special with really sappy music and, like, you know, goodbye, everyone.
It will be the most self-indulgent and proud thing I could possibly put together, so you won't miss it.
Yeah, it'll be 7 hours long.
Yeah. It'd be an ode to me and how great I am and how sad you should all be that I'm gone.
Oh, also me. I'm also here.
Mainly me, though. Mainly David.
This is why,
like, let's be real.
This is why I shouldn't let you edit the show. However, our next game coming up is Beyond Good and Evil.
Yes, Beyond Good and Evil. So this is a massively important game to, like, a shit ton of people.
That always surprises me.
Yeah.
I know that it is, but that always surprises me.
And the other thing too, I don't know exactly when this came out, but I'm pretty confident this is going to be one of the oldest ones we've done, right?
Yeah, potentially.
Mass Effect
was pretty old.
But this has got to be older than Mass Effect.
I don't know.
This is like PS2 era, isn't it?
We're not professionals. We don't have these numbers.
Yeah, we should have written this down.
Actually, but I think it is PS2, now you mentioned.
Yeah, but, I mean, obviously this is, like, almost the epitomal example of the kind of game that we want to cover. Something that we know is important and have been wanting to get to for a long time, but just haven't actually motivated ourselves to do.
One of those games on your Steam list that's just been sitting there, unplayed.
That you bought in, like, 2009 or something.
Yeah, on some sort of Christmas sale.
Yeah, and part of the impetus to get back into it is, of course, the Beyond Good and Evil 2 trailer was at 2017 E3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been officially confirmed, although apparently not even in the beginnest of stage of development.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the hell they're all doing. Fuck off Ubisoft, I guess.
They showed such a terrible looking tech demo.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it looked good, but, like, in the worst way? Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. But the point is, it's also massively different in tone. It looks like it's going for a lot more of, like, a Fifth Element type thing than the original tone of the Beyond Good and Evil. So it's definitely something we should do before the second one comes out.
Yeah, probably.
So you can join us for that next week.
Next fortnight, sorry.
Next main episode.
Yep.
Next week will be our next Fastcast, so you can join us for that as well. But that won't be a Beyond Good and Evil situation.
We assume. But anyway, I've been John.
I've been David.
And this has been the show.
Welcome, folks, to the Slowpokes podcast. As always, Slowpoke number 2 here, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number 1, John Nicolaitis.
Today, we are here to talk about a cool little indie game called
Oxenfree.
Ollie
Oxenfree.
Yeah, Ollie, that one.
Yep, there's a nice good rhyme there.